I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you for listening, thank you for being there. Thank you for staying with us for all these years. It's beginning to astound me.
Yeah, me too.
How long we've been doing this.
Yeah.
I've just been away briefly and I came back to an absolute deluge of stuff. Things everywhere, stuff to be done, cases to be done. And my mind is an absolute whirl at the moment. But never mind, it's all part of the game. Yes, I'm doing Crime Con tomorrow.
Well, by the time this comes out, you will have just done Crime Con.
I will have just done Crime Con. Talking about what makes evil killers.
Isn't that what we talk about?
That's what we do
every
week,
time.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I get such a lot of them. And I'm also promoting a new edition of my book on West, Frederick West, which has just come out from John Blake, which is very sweet. And people seem to like it. So it's been, you know, I got back on Tuesday evening and it's now Saturday and it's been full on, really.
Non-stop.
Full on. And Molly, you've been away at a course. You've been doing a course.
I was doing a mental health first aid course, yeah. So I'm now a qualified mental health first aider.
Gosh, well, if I have any problems, you'll be the first person to hear our call.
Yeah, well, I'm fully qualified.
Do you get a badge?
I'm fully qualified to assist you. No, I think I get a certificate. Actually, I say I'm fully qualified. I haven't actually had the results of my
tests. Oh, you had a
test? I had two tests, and I had to do a role play.
Oh, crikey.
Assessment.
A role play.
I did six role plays yesterday. I played two mental health first aiders and four casualties. And you have to, like, come up with the stuff on the spot.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, obviously they give you a scenario, but yeah. It's like 10 minutes of, like, pretending you're having a panic attack and, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. How was it?
I mean, I hated that part.
Oh, gosh. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
But it was fine.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Just from surviving it.
It was quite intense.
Well, especially if you've got your job to do as well.
Yeah,
you?
That was difficult.
It's not exactly, how can I put it politely, it's not exactly a walk in the park.
I've got some slightly distressed clients,
your job.
Probably. No. Hey-ho, there you go. It's important.
Well, you wear it with great aplomb, I have to say. But I think I'm pretty certain about my mental health. It went long ago. It's sort of just hovering somewhere over me. I'm not quite sure what it says, but
I think you're doing okay.
I think I'm struggling by. I hope so, anyway. Well, also I get the great joy from looking at cases and thinking about what I should be doing and the way we do it, and you know, it's very, very interesting. And I'm lucky enough to get lots of wonderful books. I've got a book, couple of books actually. One book I was going to recommend. It's, believe it or not, it's called How Done It. And it's a series of essays by crime writers about how you make crime novels.
That's interesting.
And it's very good. It's absolutely got some superb people in it. Oh, everybody, you know, Dorothy L. Sayers, Alexander McCall Smith, H.R.F. Keating. Oh, and it includes, for example, how to write endings, how to write beginnings. It's got, how to do place, how to do characters from suspense. It's a, if you're a buff, it's absolutely wonderful, including G.K. Chesterton's wonderful essay on the value of detective fiction, which is it's great. It's called How Done It. It's published by the Collins Crime Class in Crime Writing by members of the Detection Club.
Mm.
So there you go. It's a real... It's chunky.
Yeah, it's chunky.
It's not a quick read, but it is great. It's one of those sort of encyclopedias that you want to dip into. It's great fun.
Suspense.
Yes, how to write suspense.
Cool.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
A clever idea.
It is, and very good. It's edited by a man who is actually a crime writer called Martin Edwards, and very good too. So, darling.
What are we doing this week, Dad?
We're doing this week a case suggested to us by Cadence from Michigan.
Oh.
On Instagram.
Great.
And it's the case of a woman known as Nanny Doss, but also better known, perhaps, as the Giggling Granny.
Okay.
And it's an absolutely spanking story.
Oh, great.
In every way. It's got everything. It's got multiple murders. It's got strange motives. It's a work of beauty.
Super.
If you like this story, this kind of story.
We better get going then so we can hear all about it. So this is the Giggling Granny.
It is the Giggling Granny. The Giggling Granny was born Nancy Hazel. There's some debate about whether it was H-A-Z-L-E or H-A-Z-E-L, but be that as it may. She was born in Blue Mountain, Alabama, on the 4th of November, 1905. I recommend the pictures again, as I constantly do in these. There's some wonderful pictures of her. She was born to Louise, her mother, and James F. Hazel, and she was one of five children. She had a brother and three sisters. Both mum and Nanny hated James Hazel with a passion. He was a controlling, abusive father who was incredibly strict. He forced his children, all five of them, to work on the family farm, and he didn't let them go to school. She was an unhappy child, and as something that you'll recognise immediately, at the age of seven, she hit her head on an iron bar.
Classic.
Classic, isn't it? We've talked about it so often before. You know, head injuries.
Dropped on your head as a baby.
Yeah. Head injuries provoke multiple killings. Well, perhaps. Anyway, she certainly did. She was in an accident on a train. They were going to visit the family, and the train stopped suddenly, and she lurched forward and hit her head on the metal bar of a seat in front of her. James, the father, forbade makeup, attractive clothes, social events, any kind of dance, all off limits. And Nancy, soon to be known as Nanny, loved her mother's True Romance magazines. Those were what inspired her teenage years. In particular, she came to love the Lonely Hearts columns at the back. Well, not surprisingly, James chose her a husband, and she married for the first time at 16 to a man called Charlie Braggs, who was a co-worker at a linen factory that she was working at, sent there by her father. It was 1921, and Dad had chosen Braggs, the only son of a single mother who insisted on living with him at all times, including when he was now married to Nancy Hazel. Nevertheless, between 1923 and 1927, Nanny and Charlie had four children.
Wow, that's a lot of work.
Well, it is, especially is she's only 18 when the first one's born, and she's, 22? When the fourth one appears, it's a pretty tough entry. Not surprisingly, we are talking about the South here. There was a habit of drinking corn whiskey and smoking, and it was a real, if you can imagine the bluegrass mountains and all of that. and that's that sound of guitars, and it's just very potent. Anyway, she took to the drink, and Charlie wasn't all that faithful. In 1927, after the birth of the fourth child, two of her children died mysteriously. Charlie came home one day and two of them were dead on the floor. And no one could quite explain what had happened. Oh, I think they might have eaten something. You know, food poisoning, Nanny said. Oh, well, perhaps they ate some of the rat poison by mistake. Well, we are talking about the sticks, to be polite. And nobody really paid an awful lot of attention. Two children, oh, well, you've got two more, so what? Anyway, Charlie actually decided to take the eldest girl, who was called Melvina, and leaving Nanny with the baby, Florine. And her mother, Charlie's mother, who had been living with them, died shortly afterwards. Again, with no particular, looked like natural causes, she died. Nanny had gone to work at a cotton mill again. Charlie comes back with a divorcee who has a child and decides to bring Melvina back, but then decides rapidly to divorce Nanny because, and I quote, he said, "She frightens me." Mm. Well, he's only 22. It's quite hard to frighten somebody at 22.
Well,
nice. Anyway, there you go. She leaves, and in a twinkling of an eye, Nanny marries again, a man called Robert Franklin Harrelson, in 1929, and goes to move into Jacksonville with Melvina and Florine, the two daughters from Charlie. Harrelson was a drunk, no surprise. A criminal record, it was fairly low life. But nevertheless, the marriage survived for 16 years. But Nanny didn't go on to have any more children. Melvina, by this time, and we're now talking about 16 years of having passed. Mm. In 1943, it's only 14 years after they got married in 1929, Melvina gave birth to a boy, Robert Lee Haynes. In other words, Nanny's first grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1945, just as the war is coming to its end, and Harrelson has been away serving in the forces for a part of this time, Melvina has a second baby, who died soon after birth. Now, Melvina had a sort of funny dream that she'd seen her mother, Nanny, stick a hat pin into the baby's head, but she wasn't sure. Well, Nanny certainly had a hat pin, but, well, yeah, you don't expect grandmother to kill an infant son, do you? Melvina started dating someone else, and then mysteriously Robert, her first baby, dies in 1945 of asphyxia. Don't know how he asphyxiated himself, but it was while he was in Nanny's care. Now the bodies are really beginning to mount up. Coming back from the war in 45, after demobbed, Harrelson got very drunk a lot, and at one point raped Nanny. She didn't report him to the police. Instead, she put rat poison in his corn whiskey jar, and he died that night. Again, no post-mortem, no autopsy, nothing, just gone. Unrepentant, Nanny meets another man called Arlie Lanning through the Lonely Hearts column of the True Romance magazine.
Her favourite.
And they marry after 3 days.
Wow.
Mm. She often disappeared. I mean, Melvin and Florine are now grown up and no children about. So Nanny took to disappearing, sometimes for months on end. He kept the place going, and every time she came back, she was very popular in the local community, much loved. And until suddenly, Arlie's mother dies. Again, in, well, obvious circumstance. And then Arlie himself dies of heart failure. Well, the family, I mean, the town don't suspect Nanny of being any kind of villain or villainess. They, you know, all turn out for the funeral and mourn Arlie's passing, and he was a really good man. But funnily enough, shortly afterwards, their house burnt down and Nanny collected the insurance money. And she went to live with her sister, Dovey, in North Carolina, who was, believe it or not, bedridden. This story has caught everything. Guess what?
What?
Dovey dies.
No.
Quite quickly after Nanny gets there. It's wonderful.
Wow.
Okay, Nanny, unstilled, clasping the insurance money from the house, joins a dating agency. There were dating agencies in the 1940s.
How else
it was
you
called
find
the Diamond Circle. And she met a man called Richard L. Merton from North Carolina. Well, this is the fourth marriage, and they marry in 1952 in Kansas. He wasn't an alcoholic, but he was adulterous. But let's put it this way. Nonny poisoned him in much the same way as she'd clearly poisoned one or two of the other husbands.
Mm.
But her mother, his mother, had come to stay. And so she dispatched, or his mother died while she was staying with them in January 1953, and Morton himself died in May 1953. Death everywhere.
Yeah.
Unrepentant, 1 month later, Nanny marries, for the fifth time, a man called Samuel Doss, which gave her the name Nanny Doss, who was a Nazarene minister. He disapproved of her true romance appetites, and in September 1953 was admitted to hospital with what seemed to be a digestive tract infection. Presumably the first signs of the arsenic.
Yeah.
However, he recovered and indeed returned home. But on the 12th of October 1954, Doss died. And Nanny hastened to collect the two life insurance policies that she'd taken out on Doss's life. For the first time, a doctor is a little suspicious of what's going on here and orders an autopsy, the first autopsy to be conducted on any of what may or may not have been her victims. No, it will not come as a surprise to you to learn that his body was filled with a huge amount of arsenic.
Mm.
And Nanny is arrested. It is wonderful. She's arrested for Doss's murder. None of the others. Not one. She admits finally killing Doss and says, "Now my conscience is clear. There's nothing else I can tell you." So gradually, the police interview her, and gradually she begins to slowly admit that she's killed four of her five husbands, her sister, two of her children,
her grandchildren,
her mother, and a mother-in-law, Arlie Lanning's mother.
And the other fellow's mother.
Yes. Well, it's always been a bit of a blur exactly who was killed by her or not.
Mm.
In the end, she claims, and it's more of a claim than, because it is a bit fuzzy, this, she claims to have killed four husbands, two of her children, one of her sister, her mother, two grandsons, and a mother-in-law. Well, we can't be sure.
Mm.
We're not sure. In fact, Oklahoma only pursue her for one killing. That is of the Nazarene minister Samuel Doss. I think that was mostly because, had she not been so intent on grabbing the insurance money, she might well never have been stopped.
Those other murders were in a different part of the country.
Yes,
well,
they're in different counties, different states. But each time she would admit it, she'd admit a murder, then she'd say, oh, now my conscience is clear. And she got the nickname Giggling Granny because all the way through the police interrogations, she would giggle in a sort of incredibly high-pitched voice. And you can almost imagine the troopers interviewing her becoming more and more astounded as this overweight, middle-aged woman confesses to killing, well, 11, maybe more, really. But each time she says, oh, my conscience is clear, I can't tell you anymore. I mean, it's almost Keystone Cops.
That's remarkable.
However, Oklahoma will not pursue the death penalty against a woman.
Oh, why not?
Well, they didn't. And they don't. And in May the 17th, 1955, she pleads guilty to killing Samuel Doss. And she's given life. She's never charged with any of the other deaths. And indeed, survives until June 1965.
But she's one of those people that makes loads of friends in prison.
Yeah, possibly. And she dies in June 1965 at the age of 59. One of the most remarkable female serial killers in American history. She certainly rivals Eileen Wuornos in the sheer relentlessness of it, starting as a very young woman and continuing right the way through until 1954. And the killing of the fifth husband. The only husband who didn't die at Nanny's hands was her first, Charlie Braggs.
Because he left.
He got out.
Smart.
Yeah, he left.
Before she'd graduated from kids to adults.
Yes. So what a... It is an absolutely fascinating...
Amazing.
...story. And so vivid. I mean, goodness.
Love a poisoner.
Well, you do like poisoners. Don't you? The very female crime.
Yeah.
Poisoners, I know, one of your abiding passions.
There's actually a good podcast on. Hold on, let me have a look for it.
There probably
that,
is.
That historian Lucy Worsley.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Lady Killers. It's investigates the crimes of Victorian women from a contemporary feminist perspective. Obviously, my idea of absolute heaven.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she's got Florence Bravo's her first one, who we've done.
Yeah.
Marianne Cotton. Have we done Marianne Cotton?
We've done Marianne Cotton.
And then a bunch of other ones.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'd recommend.
But it is something about it. I mean, the relentlessness of it is quite extraordinary. And the sheer lack of any kind of remorse, as far as she was concerned, she was just going to go on. And on.
Didn't seem to be worried about killing people at all.
No, not at all. And then you look at the photographs of her. She's this rather open-faced.
She's very jolly.
You know, jolly lady next door, doting wife, who just happens to keep losing husbands and children and relatives.
No one says anything about.
It's amazing.
Nanny Doss.
Nanny Doss, the Giggling Granny, also known in some circles as the Lonely Hearts Killer, the Black Widow, and Lady Bluebeard.
It's got a very good selection of names.
Yeah. I quite like Lady Bluebeard.
She is extraordinary.
Yes.
Very smiley in all her pictures.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's some very early television of her as well.
Nanny Doss.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Cadence.
Thank you for suggesting it.
For suggesting that. That was very interesting. I didn't know anything about that, the giggling granny.
Yes, and also it's very much Molly's cup of tea.
Very much my cup of tea.
Literally.
Literally.
But what she used to do, she had all kinds of different tricks. Sometimes she put it in the whiskey, but sometimes she gave them prunes laced with arsenic. Mm. Stewed prunes.
Excellent.
Yes. And if you avoided the prunes, she'd give it to you in pie.
She could have done a recipe book, an arsenic recipe book.
Yes, arsenic and old recipes. It's wonderful. I mean, it's a true drama.
It's a good story.
Isn't it? Mm. It's an absolutely wonderful. So thank you again, Cadence, for pointing us at it. It's a real pleasure.
Yeah, it was a good one.
To do. I mean, it's awful. It's a multiple. And as in so many of these multiple cases, you have to feel for the victims, particularly the husbands and the children. But she didn't seem to bat an eyelid. I mean, she wasn't consumed by grief. She just giggled and said, oh, well, yes, now my conscience is clear.
I wonder why she did it.
Yes. Because she could?
Maybe.
Because she wanted to kill her father? That would be the classic, wouldn't it?
I mean, it must have had something to do with him.
Must have. It's got to be something to do with that strict father who made them work in the fields and wouldn't let her go to school.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Hmm.
Love to hear. If anybody has a theory, we'd love to hear it.
A theory on why she did it. I mean, why does anyone do it, though?
Well, but...
I mean, we have asked that question quite a few times.
Why do it so many times to so many husbands?
Well, I don't know. I think when you do... That's why the highest numbers of deaths, multiple deaths from one person, are usually like angels of death or...
Yes.
You know, doctors, poisoners.
Yeah, but poisoning is a classic female crime, isn't it?
Yeah.
Much more likely to die being poisoned by a woman than you are being stabbed.
Yeah.
Well,
it's just the physicality of it, isn't
it? Yes, it is. But also, I'm sure in my mind that she actually did it over a period of time. In other words, it wasn't one massive dose. I think she probably progressively poisoned and weakened whoever it was.
Yeah.
I suppose the moment that always sticks out in my mind is Melvina having this second child and having this dream that quotes that her mother and stuck a hat pin in its head.
That's awful.
It is really. I'm not painting... Nanny Doss is any kind of fun figure.
No.
She is not.
But extraordinary.
But the story is absolutely extraordinary. And it spans four decades.
Yeah.
In the southern states, or the southern states of the United States, where early death was not, in that period, all that exceptional. A lot of children died in childbirth or soon after childbirth. People died very quickly, suddenly, violently. It was part of the fabric of society.
Yeah.
Not like today, when everything has to be properly corralled and understood. That was a crime you could get away with, if you like.
Well, she clearly did.
Which she clearly did.
For a long time.
Mm. Very long time.
Oh, interesting.
It is. And she does satisfy one of your private pleasures, which is poisoners.
Well, I always think they come with a good story, you know.
Well, they do. That's absolutely right. Poisoners do.
Gotta have a bit
The insurance fraud bit, though, the sort of brides in the bath. Well, no, he would get them right out of the insurance policy and drown them the next day. I mean, it's not quite as blunt as that.
Yeah, well, probably by that point she was like, oh, I might as well make some money out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, she was a figure of some significance, whom, I have to say, I had never heard.
Me neither.
Very, very good story.
Yeah, it was a good one. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for suggesting it. Are you going to something exciting next week, darling, or are you back to work? Just back to work?
Just working. Going to see To Kill a Mockingbird next week.
Oh, yeah? Good-o. I'd like to know if it's good.
I've heard it's good. It's got good reviews.
It's a great show. A great story.
Yeah.
Great, great. What am I doing? Oh, I've watched all The Lincoln Lawyer. First series... Netflix.
You love a legal drama, don't you, Dad?
I do. I'm very fond of legal dramas.
You ever watched Suits?
No, I haven't watched that. I must watch that.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
It's kind of fluffy, but it's good.
Yeah. I like legal dramas very much. And I'm catching up on the latest Bosch series, Bosch Legacy. So my evenings are full of much the same as my days, really.
Law and Murder.
Yes. Molly sometimes tries to persuade me to watch something quieter.
Don't think there's much point in trying.
Well, I don't know. Could be good.
Well, thank you. And thank you to all the people that help us, to our producer, Sam Brain, to my brother Dan, who did the music, my friend George, who drew a caricature, for Audio Boom for hosting us, for Jeffrey for all the hard work, and to the listeners for your suggestions and for listening. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being with us through this journey. It was greatly, greatly appreciated. And as I say, more often than not, do be careful out there.